You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right. With hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. Well, folks, President Trump finally got his summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. And for those following the increasingly murky intrigues of the Trump-Russia scandal, he certainly didn't disappoint. Just days after the Mueller investigation indicted a dozen Russian nationals for interfering in the 2016 election, and his own director of national intelligence suggested that, quote, the warning lights are blinking red again in 2018, President Trump cozied up to Putin in front of the press and offered a stunning rebuke of the U.S. intelligence community, suggesting that he couldn't see any reason why Russia would interfere in the election and blaming many years of U.S. foolishness and stupidity for the current state of U.S.-Russia relations. Most of the world media, including several of Trump's favorite Fox News hosts, were quick to condemn Trump's statements, joined by many Republican leaders like John McCain, Paul Ryan, and Mitch McConnell. Needless to say, Trump's bizarre actions only fueled further speculation of Russian collusion, as many of us were left to wonder, what the hell is he doing, and just what does Vladimir Putin have on him? One man thinks he knows. He's Malcolm Nance, a globally recognized intelligence community member, a counterterrorism analyst for NBC News and MSNBC, and best-selling author of The Plot to Hack America. In his latest book, Nance describes how Vladimir Putin used blackmail, espionage, assassination, and psychological warfare to win the 2016 election for Donald Trump, and how Trump's now returning the favor many times over. The book is called The Plot to Destroy Democracy: How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. And today, Malcolm joins me on the podcast to reveal how he says Trump went from an unwitting asset of Russia to a willing asset, deliberately undermining NATO, the European Union, and even his own country. Indeed, Nance says Donald Trump has betrayed his oath to uphold the Constitution and is the closest thing we've ever seen to another Benedict Arnold. He reveals Russia's broader efforts to undermine the U.S. and the influential Americans enabling Russian interference, including the most powerful gun rights organization in the country, the politician known as Putin's man in Congress, and the alt-right media baron he calls the American Goebbels. And what's Vladimir Putin's ultimate goal? He says, to dismantle Western democracy itself. Coming up with Malcolm Nance in just a moment. Malcolm Nance is a globally recognized intelligence community member and a counterterrorism analyst for NBC News and MSNBC. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Plot to Hack America, and now he follows it up with his latest book, The Plot to Destroy Democracy: How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. Malcolm, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Malcolm, you make a pretty bold statement just in the title of the book, as well as assertions you've made that Donald Trump is a willing asset of Vladimir Putin's, and as you say, as close to Benedict Arnold as we're ever going to get. You certainly don't hedge, Malcolm. Without being privy to the Mueller investigation, what do you base all this on?
Well, you know, when I wrote Plot to Hack America, which I wrote 20, now I think we're at 23 months ago, where I published my analysis of how the Russians had done the hacking, what would it be the intelligence objectives of the hacking, and who would be the primary beneficiary of this large-scale cyber warfare operation against the United States. In fact, I was the first person on national media to get in front of a camera on MSNBC and say the United States had been attacked in this cyber warfare
right.
operation. That being said, that book led to an outline of how Russia did it at that point. But what was missing was I had to expand on that and come to the conclusions and show the evidence that this was a very deep, wide-ranging intelligence operation worked at the highest levels of the Kremlin, and more importantly, show just how far this Russian strategy to damage the West and to get someone who was sympathetic to them into the White House. And it shows that it was not just the United States. They've been carrying out these operations all throughout Europe, and practically all of European conservatism is not only under their sway, but most parties in Europe take money openly from Moscow. They run candidates that are associated with Moscow. And that Donald Trump is just the culmination of activities that they've been putting into place for almost 15 years now.
We know about Putin's efforts to influence elections in the former Eastern Bloc countries like Ukraine, but has he also made attempts to interfere with elections in Western Europe as well?
Yes. And in fact, some of the first activities that we saw of Russian military intelligence and Russian state intelligence agencies, the GRU and the FSB, in cyber warfare operations were not in Eastern Europe and they were not in the United States. They were in Western Europe and NATO allied nations like Estonia, Latvia, the Ukraine, Germany, France, Britain, Spain. And all of these activities were almost test beds for how they intended to carry out what we call a world web war against the United States. And so not only did they carry out, hackings of servers, they did operations where they blackmailed politicians, where they released data related to politicians who were oppositionists. And almost all of their effort was aimed at the liberal socialist democracies in Western Europe. And they supported the activities of right-wing conservative groups in Europe that were backed by Vladimir Putin, which, as I said before, is almost all conservative groups in Europe.
And I tend to agree that where there's smoke, there's fire with the Russia investigation into Trump's connection to it. But I've also always acknowledged that there were a lot of political neophytes on the Trump campaign, like Carter Page and Papadopoulos, and fringe operators like Roger Stone, who may not have had very much common sense with regard to Russia or may have been going rogue in their interactions with Russian operatives. That doesn't necessarily make it a conspiracy from the man at the top, or does it, in
your
opinion?
When you look at a lot of these neophytes, what we see is less of a group of amateurs who are just dabbling around the edges. Clearly, there, at some point, someone made it clear to almost all the players that what they wanted most in this world was rapprochement with the Russians and some sort of Trump-Putin summit or meeting. Every player in this story at some point met with Russians, concealed the fact that they met with Russians, and were trying to arrange meetings between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. Donald Trump himself had lied several times, saying that he had already met Vladimir Putin at the Miss Universe pageant. And there's just, if you focus it, take an intelligence community's way of looking at this. When we don't just connect the dots, we see that there's a constellation of dots, and all of those dots point in one direction, right? Then we get a little suspicious. So we can't discount the, you know, that one guy, Carter Page, may have been a neophyte. Carter Page is a Naval Academy graduate, a Marine intelligence officer who went and worked in with the Russians for years. And he could easily have been a victim of a Russian intelligence operation that he may not even have known he was involved in. But when we start picking up 5, 6, 7, 10 different activities, all of which goes right to Donald Trump's core principles, beliefs, and statements about Russia, then that information came from the top. It just wasn't a series of bizarre coincidences that just led us to assume that Donald Trump was, you know, completely ignorant of all of this goodwill and effort. There's just no way. I mean, I'd hate to say it, that when the U.S. intelligence communities came out with a report and said that they had high confidence that the Russians were working on behalf of Donald Trump and electing him at Donald Trump, I always point out that we kill people with drones and cruise missiles for lesser levels of confidence.
So if I'm reading this correctly, you think that Donald Trump is more than just a pawn or a useful idiot to Vladimir Putin. You think he is deliberately aiding a hostile foreign state?
Well, I think at some point, I don't think Donald Trump sees it as him actually working on behalf of another nation. I think he sees the efforts that are taking place as other entities, people, organizations working on behalf of his awesomeness, right? And he sees all of this effort as just people loving him. I mean, this goes to his ego. Granted, I would need a CIA psychiatrist, you know, or psychologist to do a, you know, a leadership psychological profile workup on him. But he's a pretty easy read for people in the intelligence community. You just massage their egos, you pay them off with money, you coerce them or co-opt them, and they will do what you need. But the question is it winning or is it unwinning? And so I think Trump started as the technical term of a useful idiot, as we all learned back in the Soviet Union era, people who were doing things to the benefit of Russia, but not actually knowing that they were helping Russia with their ignorant statements, right? That's one type of person. Is he a fellow traveler? Is he a person that actually ideologically buys into everything that Russia and Putin says? I don't believe that he is, to a certain extent, because I do believe that he is a true believer that autocracy is the more perfect form of government than constitutional republicanism or democracy. But to a certain extent, he's not going to do that unless he's the autocrat. Second, you have, is he an unwitting asset, which is a person who is now being played by another agency and does not understand the depth and the magnitude and the machinations of the strings that are attached to him? And finally, you have a witting asset, which is a person who knows things are being done for their benefit, knows that it may have a treasonous or aspect to it, and does not care so long as it benefits him. I think Trump went through all four stages. I think he started as a useful idiot when he was trying to sell apartments to Russians and they needed to liquidate their billions of illicit money, transitioned over to when he had, you know, he had a meeting in Moscow in November 2013 at the Miss Universe pageant that was reported on virtually by no one in the United States. He had a 2-hour sit down with the top 12 oligarchs of Russia, the richest men in Russia, including personal representatives of Vladimir Putin, behind closed doors. And when he walked out, he was spouting almost verbatim Russia's terminology, their party line, how they viewed NATO, how they viewed European Union trade, and that, you know, even his statement he made on Crimea, that, well, most people in Crimea speak Russian. That is a Russian state propaganda statement that they used to justify the invasion of Crimea. Donald Trump speaks that language. So at some point he transitioned to, sort of a temporary, maybe a true believer for his own personal purposes, which is called an unwitting asset. And then when he realized many entities were working to corrupt Hillary Clinton, whether it was through Papadopoulos, Mike Flynn, Roger Stone, WikiLeaks, all of these organizations associated with the Russian state and Russian intelligence now were working to get him elected president. He became a winning asset. And certainly he admitted that. He confessed that when he said, Russia, if you're listening, I want you to release Hillary Clinton's 30,000 emails.
Well, you know, if Trump is a useful idiot to Putin, how useful has he been? Why has he departed from Putin on Syria policy and agreed to arm Ukraine, appoint a Russia hawk like John Bolton? How do you explain the decisions that don't fit into the Trump-Russia narrative?
Well, you know, Donald Trump is president of the United States, but he's not the dictator of the United States. Mm-hmm. And virtually all of those decisions that have happened, you know, with the exception of appointing Bolton, and Bolton apparently he's put his leash on and he likes to be walked around right now because Trump has him meeting with Vladimir Putin yesterday and arranging the summit meeting for the next that's going to happen within the next month. And Bolton doesn't seem to be a dissenter at all to Trump's policy. But better, I think the best way to look at it is Trump plays long ball, right? You know, he's not trying to get the first. He thinks in his mind that he's going to fulfill some sort of destiny that he started when he took out full page ads in 1987, asking Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush to appoint him as the negotiator on the nuclear arms reduction treaties. And if you look at all these little points where he went to the Soviet Union to try to open up hotels, luxury hotels in Moscow, and at that time Leningrad or St. Petersburg in the late 1990s. And he, you know, and then when the Russian money started to flow in, all of these points have Donald Trump feel looking like his destiny is to do something on a grand scale that one, Barack Obama certainly wouldn't do. Barack Obama was held the hardline American position on Russia as, you know, this new oligarchy that was a human rights abuser, that was getting up the mischief around the world. Donald Trump didn't seem to have a problem with any of that. And now he is going to have this grand summit with Vladimir Putin. And Putin doesn't care about Syria. He doesn't really care too much about the Ukraine, Crimea, because he's already taken that. And Trump has already blamed Barack Obama for Russia's activities in Crimea and has essentially given it over to them. What Russia wants is their sanctions lifted because that's their personal money that they've stolen and they want it back.
Would you suspect the heavy hand of Vladimir Putin in the North Korea policy as well?
Well, we already know from reporting that Putin was the one that recommended to him in January of this year. And I want to point out that within weeks of that phone conversation in January of this year, there was a secret summit between the director of the CIA and National Director of National Intelligence and the three heads of Russian military intelligence and FSB. And that which only could have occurred if Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin had a phone conversation and ordered those agencies to meet with each other face to face in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So these communications have already been happening. Putin recommended to Trump in January of this year to stop doing strategic military defensive exercises on the Korean Peninsula in order to give Kim Jong-un something that would allow him to come to Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Jong-un got a trip to Singapore. I've been there. It's great. You can go shopping. There's really nice tea shops there. You know, but what we got was we've ended a military activity which would prepare us not just for the defense of the Korean Peninsula, but for activities that go on in China and activities that go on in Russia. It was Vladimir Putin just must laugh himself to sleep every night thinking that he is the spy master in chief that he is certainly showing himself to be when it comes to Donald Trump.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Malcolm Nance when we come back in just a minute. How do you stay up to date with the latest business news? If you're still relying on traditional news outlets, keeping up with the news feels like a chore, but it doesn't have to be that way. Business news can be enjoyable, even something you actually look forward to. How? It's called Morning Brew, and it's a free daily email newsletter that delivers the latest business news directly to your inbox every weekday morning. The writers at Morning Brew curate the top business stories that you should know about and deliver them in a conversational and witty tone. Best of all, it's just a quick 5-minute read. Seriously, imagine getting all the information you need to start your day in just 5 minutes and enjoying every second of it. I know how overwhelming it can be when you've got so much news coming at you every day, and that's why I subscribe to Morning Brew for my business news. I love that it's concise, easy to read, and even entertaining, a great, fast way to get the most essential business news before I head into the office. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for free at morningbrew.com/kick. That's morningbrew.com/kick to start getting your daily dose of business news. And now, back to the show. Now, you say that Putin has interfered in American elections and American political practices aside from Trump. You say that he's aided right-wing candidates and groups here in the U.S. Who are you referring to?
In the United States, and I have a chapter called The American Beachhead. It's interesting because Russia is seen amongst the American conservatives. If you guys think back to the Barack Obama period, there were really the first signs of that where you would see American politicians like Dana Rohrabacher and Stephen King that would say, you know, Vladimir Putin is a strong man. Rohrabacher actually was the butt of a joke by Paul Ryan, where he said that he was in the pocket of Moscow, right? Almost hinting that he was in the...
Well, he is known as Putin's man in Congress,
man in
right?
I've met him, and yeah. And the first thing he challenged you with is how wonderful Russia is, and have you ever been there? And it's you know, it's a kid's taunt, right? It's like, I don't need to go to a country that's essentially a trailer park with atomic bombs. I mean, Russia has the GDP of Italy, and Mexico has a stronger economy than Russia. They have weapon sales and they have, oil and gas, and that's just about it, and the oligarchy that runs it. But that being said, the way that Trump sees Korea is now framed through the eyes of Vladimir Putin. And there's a technical term for that. I write about how that these meetings that Trump had in 2013, 2014, with these Russians like Amina Galarov, you know, Arasa Galarov, the top oligarchs of Russia, the Russian intelligence has an information warfare tool they call reflexive control. And reflexive control, they changed the name a couple of years later to perception management. And that's where you build an information bubble around your target in such a way that you can frame whatever he does, always through the lens or the tint of the Russian worldview. And so when he went to that meeting, from that day on, because I've asked journalists for over the last 2 years until I did the research on this, where did Trump come up with this anti-NATO mindset, this anti-globalist mindset, this anti-European Union mindset? He never spoke about that before, but he did when he came out from Russia after the Miss Universe pageant. And that means that they trained him on what the world looked like for Russia. Trump incorporated that into his worldview, and he will not violate it like his adoration of Vladimir Putin, which is actually an X factor that I think Robert Mueller is going to figure out, right? What debt does Putin have on this?
Okay.
Man? So with that bubble, whatever Trump does, left, right, up, down, go against Russia, go for Russia, it's still within the framework that Russia built around him.
Now, going back to what you called just now his debt to Russia, from your understanding of Russia's kompromat practices and the type of Americans they target, would a rich, showy businessman with political ambitions like Donald Trump be the kind of person they would go after?
You know, I always like to make it clear here. I had a public Twitter spat with Glenn Greenwald a couple of years ago where he said, you're constantly referring to an agency that ceased to exist 25 years ago, the KGB. Well, in fact, what happened when the Soviet Union transitioned to the Russian Federation is they changed the letters of the KGB, right? And they took away the border guards, the MVD, and they broke up the clandestine service into the SVR. And they took all of the traditional functions of the KGB and they put it into the FSB, the State Security Bureau, which is still, you know, which is essentially they changed the letters of the alphabet. So the KGB and its body of knowledge, its corporate knowledge and how to do operations, not only exist, their strategic goals still exist. And the man that is the ruler of Russia was a career KGB officer. His top four advisors, each one, three were KGB officers, one was a senior FSB officer. So Russia is led by the people who have the mindset, who were raised as communists to believe that American democracy, liberal democracy in Europe, is the greatest obstacle to Russia's rise in the world. But they've also learned now as, you know, semi, you want to call it, you know, faux democracy autocrats, that the way to damage American democracy and European democracy is to vote it out of existence. Use democracy to dismantle democracy. Donald Trump is very sympathetic to those goals. We saw that this week. I mean, I could draft a list. I had to cut out 20,000 words from this book about the things Donald Trump did that are anti-democratic and an anathema to American form of government. The man is just desperate to be an autocrat and to be loved and admired like the oligarchs that he views himself more akin to.
You also assert that Russia left much of the execution of their strategy to the man you call the American Goebbels, Steve Bannon. That's surprising to me because he seems to be the one guy in Trump's orbit who's largely avoided scrutiny in the Mueller investigation. What kind of evidence is there of his ties to Russia?
Well, there's a lot of evidence of his ideological ties to Russia. You have to understand, Russia is not a former, you know, it's a former communist country, but they didn't just suddenly, you know, become atheist overnight. What happened when the Soviet Union fell is Russians realized that their cultural identity was closer to the way Tsar Nicholas I ruled, which was autocracy or orthodoxy in the church and nationalism. And Vladimir Putin needed to solidify that nation. There were people calling for a return to communism in central government in the 1990s. But all that crazy money they earned from, you know, liquidating the Soviet Union had to be used. It increased consumerism in Russia, and it created a class of the ultra-rich, right, the oligarchs. So his ideology is very close to the Tsar's, which is they brought back the centralism of the Orthodox Church, which means they are Orthodox Christians, and they also brought back the central belief in autocracy, that one strong man needed to hold these little oligarchical fiefdoms together. And so by creating this, Vladimir Putin became that strong man, and he realized that his best bet to sustaining this and to making Russia great again really required that he would have to tear down the United States. And the best way to do that is to have Americans in this country who admired Putin's strongman leadership, who admired his Christian values. If you watch Russian television, this man goes to Orthodox Church on TV. They love it. They eat it up. And so groups like the extremist American evangelicals in the late 2010s, 2010 through 2012, started going to Moscow because they felt that Moscow was actually more ideologically acceptable than being in Barack Obama's America. And Russia understood that. Russian state understood that and started holding annual conferences in Russia on, you know, to save Christianity, the salvation of Christianity. Because many of these groups were saying Barack Obama was selling out America to, you know, to Islam and other things. Right. The Russians, using their decades and decades and decades of KGB monitoring of the United States, saw that the evangelicals and, an interesting factor, the National Rifle Association were two groups which were openly accepting of Vladimir Putin as a strongman.
Yeah. What do you make of these recent revelations of Russian ties to the NRA? I mean, isn't it a little bit laughable that these authoritarian bureaucrats and Russian oligarchs would somehow be champions of Second Amendment rights? I mean, what were they really up to?
Yeah, you know, there's Russia's 180 million people. There are only 200,000 legal rifles in Russia, right? These are essentially birding shotguns and bolt action hunting rifles of a small caliber, like 22 caliber and some 7.6 millimeter. But there are no AK-47s in Russia that are legal, right? The weaponry we have in the United States, they're not legal at all. And they must be registered. You have to have your fingerprints on file, your photographs on file, all the things the NRA hates in the United States, Russia has for the rigid, brutal control of the weapons they have. But the NRA really started getting this affinity towards Russia when Barack Obama put in place an import restriction on the AK-47 directly from Kalashnikov in Russia. And so the AK-47 had to be made by license here in the United States, right? And so I'm a gun owner. I have a lot of, you know, I'm a big shooter. I watch the industry. But you know what? I started seeing these guys. The AK-47 was starting to be like the second rifle you had to own behind the AR-15 for serious, you know, survivalist and gun owners due to its, you know, its toughness and resilience. But these guys started opening up, you know, hagiographic biographies of Mikhail Kalashnikov when he died, and you know, magazines were writing about how awesome the Russian gun industry is, and the Russians actually sent a representative to the United States, a guy by the name of Torshin, who is very closely aligned to the Russian mafia, and he was sent as the representative to open up lines with the NRA and got direct feeds to Donald Trump Jr. and then Donald Trump. The suspicion is that they may have channeled between $20 and $70 million dollars to the Trump campaign through the NRA. That remains to be seen, but it was just another avenue of getting money to their man through an organization that was 100% loyal to, you know, this autocratic-styled American candidate.
And it's become something of a parlor game among political pundits to try and surmise why Putin's doing all this. The conventional wisdom seems to be something along the lines of Putin just wants respect for Russia, to restore a global balance of power, or maybe he's simply motivated by self-preservation. What do you think is Putin's end game here?
Oh, it's very simple. And all of those other conjectures just fall short of the mark, you know.
Okay.
I come from the intelligence community. We are very empirical people. You know, we do projections from the things that you do, right? And what capacity that you have. This is a man, Vladimir Putin, who decided he would not just put his thumb on the scale in the United States presidential election. He would choose a candidate. And the evidence is overwhelming. I hear people all the time say, where's the evidence? It's like, yeah, there's a lot of evidence. There's a lot of reporting out there. But, you know, that evidence is in the hands of the Justice Department. So what was Vladimir Putin's overarching goal? Was it just to bring Russia back up into balance, you know, or just to show that he's a strong man? Or was he just a clever spy master? It's much more insidious than that. Russia for the last 15 years has essentially been buying all of Europe's, Western Europe and Eastern Europe's conservative parties. Conservatives around the world and in the United States see Russia as the central strong body of Christian conservatism. And if you type that in, you know, Russia Christian conservatives opinion into Google, you'll get a lot of American politicians who praise Putin
really
for his strength and his leadership. Oh, yeah. I think there was a poll, and don't quote me on this, but there was a poll where they asked who is a stronger leader, Vladimir Putin or Barack Obama, and Republicans came up. It was somewhere between 50% and 59% said Vladimir Putin and 21% said Barack Obama. So it just shows you where people, you know, they have a greater love for an authoritarian dictator who is an enemy of the United States and an ex-KGB officer than a duly elected president of the United States.
Scary.
So what's his end goal? It's very simple. he is realigning the world. And he is most interested through his philosopher, Alexander Dugin, and the student of his philosopher, Steve Bannon, in realigning the world away from how it has existed since the end of World War II, which is the Atlantic Alliance. That's Washington, D.C., and his lines of control and influence out into the European capitals. And he intends to realign that along the what they call the Neo-Eurasian model,
wow,
where Moscow will become the center of the universe, and European capitals will exercise, they will exercise their power, control, and influence with Moscow as the center of their world and the United States as a tertiary leg of that. Now, how do you do it? It's simple. You elect democratic governments made up of conservatives that you help fund, that you help influence, and you get them into power, and you realign the balance of power. And we've seen evidence of this in Donald Trump. Here's a good example. Hans Christian Strache, the prime minister of Austria, came from a party that formed as a neo-Nazi party in the 1950s, and joined with a conservative party in the 2000s. He immediately, after being elected, sent two representatives to Trump Tower. Those representatives met with Donald Trump, Michael Flynn, and then went on to Moscow to sign a contract between Putin's United Russia Party and the OFP in Austria to create an axis, an alliance. What's happening here is there are, and you know, these countries are becoming less democracies and more autocracies. And Putin, I think, is trying to create an alliance or an axis of autocracies. And he views the United States as the one nation that needs to be transformed from what it is now, which is a Republican constitutional republic, you know, and I have to remind people from time to time, a republic is a democratic government which preserves the rights of minorities. And he wants to transform it into an autocracy. And Donald Trump seems pretty dang bent on making that happen.
Well, before we go, is there any reason to believe that they won't try to attempt the same thing in 2018? Maybe it's not worth the effort, or maybe there's too much heat for them to try and replicate this strategy just 2 years after the 2016 election?
There's no heat. There's no heat at all.
Okay.
In fact, the president of the United States and 40% of the American public believe that nothing happened, that it was all a hoax, that one FBI agent had completely engineered the entire story of Russian interference into the election, that it was all, you know, Hillary Clinton had done all that. Look, we're in trouble. And now I'm going to stop with the jokes. But this nation is in serious trouble. They can engineer this election. And the easiest way to engineer it is in September, flood the internet with emails from Democratic candidates. Or worse yet, if they, you know, because we've done nothing, there is nothing in place to stop them from changing voter registration rolls, which is the easiest way to cheat. Because if you change the zip codes on 100,000 people or their address by one digit in the voter rolls, then on election day, they will be disenfranchised because they are not matching with the data that's supposed to be in the voter registration data. Or worse, they could just openly cheat in this election, change election polls, especially if it's a blue wave. And that would just set the United States on the path to civil war and dictatorial rule. Now, that all sounds ridiculous, right?
It does sound James Bond villainish.
I've said this. We are dealing with a James Bond level villain.
Wow. No kidding.
Vladimir Putin is a former KGB. It would be like making me president of the United States, right? Guys who are in the community, we love that game. Mm-hmm. And Putin now had all of the tools of the KGB, but technology and money of the United States and a world that he could infiltrate with and influence at the stroke of a key on a computer keyboard. None of this having to buy printing presses and journalists. He could influence the world. He saw his shot in 2016. He took his shot. He put his man in office. And now his man is doing his bidding.
Yeah.
And you don't have to believe me. All the empirical evidence in the world is sitting there. The only people who are rejecting that surmise are the people who have bought into this belief that Donald Trump is, you know, essentially sent to him by God. And I've actually had people tell me to my face that that's what's happened.
I mentioned at the top of this your comment when you said Trump is as close to Benedict Arnold as we're going to get. In your opinion, do you believe that Donald Trump has committed treason?
Well, first off, treason is a technical legal term. And no one, I mean, since the Rosenbergs, no one has been charged with treason. Even the spies that we catch in the United States. I believe Donald Trump has clearly, openly, flagrantly, and almost with a laugh and a toss of his hair, betrayed the oath that he took to the Constitution. I believe he does not believe in the oath, and there's very little evidence that he believes in the Constitution. And I at the end of the day, the FBI is out defending this nation. The special prosecutor has an overwhelming amount of evidence that he has to go through, as well as intelligence from the intelligence communities. And, you know, his whole past is now on the chopping block. So we will have RICO-level, investigations going at this point. But did Donald Trump work actively and openly with a hostile intelligence agency or a foreign power to get himself elected president? I will leave that up to the special counsel to answer. But, you know, I would not get comfortable in the Oval Office seat for long if that turns out to be true. Even the most recalcitrant Republican, if this is even marginally true, will have to run away from him.
Very intriguing stuff. Again, the book is called The Plot to Destroy Democracy, How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. Malcolm Nance, thanks for talking with me.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks again to Malcolm Nance for coming on the show. Order The Plot to Destroy Democracy on Amazon or Audible and follow him on Twitter at Malcolm Nance. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right, with hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.